Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 8 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for spring pre-registration is April 21st. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Jason Burns in for Charity Nebbe. The spring planting season is upon us, and you may be thinking about taters. Lovely potatoes to have in your garden, but there are a lot of questions to sort out before you start. What type of potatoes? What type of location should you pick? What you can grow them in? Thankfully, we have the experts here to answer those questions. I'm joined by Cindy Haynes from ISU, Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
And Richard Geron is here from ISU Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with the most basic question, which is what type of potato should you pick before you stick it in the ground?
Well, what we typically plant in cool season, often in April, is the Irish potato or the white potato. You can plant sweet potatoes, too, but they have to come a little bit later.
And that's an important distinction, too, mm-hmm. because we call them both potatoes, but they are quite different plants.
They are. So the Irish potato that we plant now is a tuber that can be cut up into pieces. So these seed pieces, which each seed piece has one or two eyes or nodes or buds that kind of that grow kind of like or germinate kind of like a seed, is what we would plant now.
Right.
And the cultivar or variety of potato that you choose is really up to you and what you prefer. Superior, Yukon Gold, Kennebec, Red Norland, Red Pontiac, those are all, they're very popular cultivars that we plant now.
And so when you select a particular cultivar, where should you source that from? Where should you actually get those those potatoes from?
Good question, because you really want certified disease-free potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we get these from garden centers. Local garden centers will have them at this time. You can also order these from catalogs or online from certain sources.
Okay.
Where you get your seeds, other seeds for peppers and tomatoes.
So if I'm looking at a particular site in my backyard and I haven't had a garden in the past, mm-hmm. but I have this inkling of, gee, I think I'd really like to get some potatoes mm-hmm. in this year. Do I need to kind of check things out? What should I be looking for in a good site to grow some potatoes?
For planting potatoes, full sun is usually required. They usually need 6 hours of direct sunlight a day. And then I would tell you to check your soil as well, because it needs to be a really good, loose, fairly fertile soil. And ideally, if you know the pH, we like the pH to be a little bit on the acidic side.
Okay.
So good, well-drained, fertile soil, sunny site. That's what you're looking for. And if it's a new site, you're probably going to have to till it up a little bit to make it a little bit easier to plant.
Right. So if you don't have that rototiller, find a friend who does.
Right. Or rent one. Often there's a hardware store nearby that can rent one.
Very good. There's a lot of advice out there, free advice for people mm-hmm. who are growing literally anything. And one of the things that I've heard a bunch that pops up is Good Friday seems mm-hmm. to be associated with planting potatoes.
And
so what's the truth behind that, if any?
Right. This is actually a good day to plant potatoes, because Good Friday falls in the kind of the middle of April.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, we were just talking about this before. This only works once every 3 or 4 years, because when Good Friday's in March, it's a little too early to plant potatoes. You might not even be able to dig the ground. So this is one of those old wives' tales that you should always plant potatoes on Good Friday. You should always plant potatoes generally in mid-April or sometime in April for Iowa gardens, a little bit earlier if you're south. In southern Iowa, maybe a little bit later if you're in northern Iowa. So April's a good time to plant.
So we're
but only on those Good Fridays when it falls in April.
Yeah. So it's basically like anything else. There's a seed of truth there, perhaps, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. You got to kind of look at the calendar before anything else.
Right.
So let's say somebody's in a situation where they don't have a really good garden plot, and there's not a great spot that they want to till up. Can you grow potatoes in like containers or anything like that?
You can. You can grow potatoes in bags. I've seen these really big kind of 10 or 20 gallon plastic woven bags that they're made for potatoes. I've seen them grown in whiskey barrels. I've actually seen them grown in a tower of tires.
Really?
Too. Yeah, which is kind of interesting to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So you think about a potato, it's planted, at a certain depth. There's some soil below it so that it can sit out some roots and start forming tubers. and then it grows up. And then you just kind of mound some soil on top of it as it continues to grow. So you create more space for more tubers.
Oh, interesting.
So it's planted probably a third from the bottom of whatever container you have, and you mound some more soil in it as it continues to grow. And sometimes these containers make it really easy to harvest because you just dump the container or flip it off or take off a couple of tires and then you're ready to harvest. So it works well in certain situations. It still requires quite a volume of soil.
Yeah.
So a 5-gallon bucket's probably not big enough.
The key ingredient is always dirt. Just
yes.
Got to have a lot of dirt.
A lot of good soil for
That's
this
right.
one.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So now we talked about kind of planting. Let's transition a little bit because you talked about the care of potatoes in containers. So just generally, once I've got my potatoes planted and in the ground, how do I need to care for these things? How much maintenance do they require?
They don't require a lot. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we continue to mound some soil around the base because we don't want those tubers that are developing to start forming chlorophyll or green shoulders. So we keep the tubers dark by mounding some soil. Obviously, you're going to weed as needed. You're going to water as needed. And otherwise, you just kind of let it happen. So
okay.
It's kind of one of the easier vegetable crops to maintain.
So I'm somebody who has not traditionally had what you would call a green thumb. I'm admiring everybody who does, but I have kiddos who are really interested.
Yeah.
And it seems like potatoes might be a good way to kind of get going in the garden. Is that right?
Yeah, this is a great way to excite and engage youth in gardening because potatoes are easy. They're big. It's not a tiny seed, so it's something you can plant 3 or 4 inches down. You mound up the dirt, pat them, tell them it's time to grow, mound a little bit more as they continue to grow. And then when you're harvesting, and you can harvest a couple of different times. You can harvest new potatoes when they're small because sometimes we're impatient and we need to harvest a little early. Or you can wait until those tops die and then harvest the full-size potatoes. And with kids, it's like digging for gold. It's like the best thing ever.
Yeah, seeing their eyes and seeing the results is the highlight there for sure.
Absolutely.
We're talking potatoes right now, but of course we'll open up the phone lines and the email to your plant questions here in a bit. If you want to go ahead and get some of those calls in right now, feel free. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also email us anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I don't want to feel like, we're cursing anybody with potatoes, but I do want to talk about some of the problems that can maybe pop up. So what are some things that you should look for when you're harvesting your potatoes or maybe even before that are some problem signs that you might want to deal with if you're growing potatoes?
Right. You'll see sometimes a potato beetle that will feed on the foliage. Sometimes it'll do quite a lot of damage to the foliage. Generally, it doesn't greatly impact the tubers that are formed. So, and they usually don't, eat on the tubers themselves. So there's not a lot that you usually have to do. I see when I dig up potatoes frequently scab, which is just like a kind of hard, crusty buildup on the skin of the potatoes. This is usually an indication that it may not be scab-resistant cultivar or your pH might be a little bit too high. It's easily peeled, though, so the potato's still edible.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of people may think that you got to throw that out, but as long as you peel, you're okay?
You're fine. You can remove it. Sometimes we see the green parts of potatoes because they got exposed to some sun. That's another one that you can just kind of cut off and remove.
Gotcha.
And then frequently in really unusual weather, when we get a lot of rain or it stays fairly dry, sometimes you'll get really knobby potatoes. So they'll be kind of bumpy and a little bit misshapen. Once again, they're usually still edible.
Okay. They may not be the most visually appealing magazine-ready potatoes.
But... Right. But, they still make good French fries.
There you go.
Or chips or mashed potatoes.
And did we talk about, you can sometimes get white spots or like raised spots on potatoes too. I've seen that.
Right.
What typically causes that?
Yeah, there's a lot of environmental conditions that kind of cause those kind of blisters sometimes on potatoes. I think that one is more moisture dependent.
Very wet.
Yeah.
Right, because potatoes have little lenticels where they exchange gas.
Mm-hmm.
And when the soil is saturated, they have a hard time doing that. So they have these raised lenticels. So that's why you see that bigger part.
once again, it's something that can just be peeled off and removed.
Okay, very good. Very good. So one thing that I came across, which I thought was kind of interesting, we always focus on the potatoes, which you dig up. But the potato plant does have a fruit on it.
It does. The potato plant flowers, and the flowers can produce a fruit. And they look like a little green tomato. Yeah, they're a little green fuzzy tomato. And certain cultivars will do this more than others. And it's really cool because there's seeds inside, and gardeners always ask if we can plant those seeds. And usually, no, it takes forever to get a potato from them, and you don't know what you would get. But I do remind gardeners that those potato fruits that look like the little green tomatoes are poisonous.
Oh, wow.
So don't ingest these. So you eat the potato tubers, but leave that seed and that fruit alone.
Interesting. I did not know that. Okay. Well, that's...
So keep that out of kids' reach. Mm-hmm.
Yukon Gold is the variety that does it the most.
It does.
Most other ones don't do it very often, but Yukon Gold does it very consistently.
And that's a really popular cultivar of potato.
Okay. So something to watch for. That fruit, it's not anything like a tomato, and you should just chuck it.
Right.
Exactly. Okay.
So ammunition. That's what you could do. Ammunition for the little ones.
That's right. So after I dig up these potatoes, I think it would be real quick if we could mention just how to store them. Let's say you got a whole bunch of them and you don't have everybody to give them to. How do you hang on to these and keep them fresh?
Basically, you want to store those in a cool location. Ideally, the temperature should be around 40 degrees, fairly moist site. So if you had like a cave or a root cellar, it would be great. And if you have those conditions, they'll last for a long, long time.
Okay, very good. So anything else we should think about sending people off with knowledge for potatoes or things that people miss?
Potatoes are fun, so you don't have to stick with the white ones. There's some purple ones. There's some pink ones. So, you know, you can do some really interesting things with potatoes. So experiment with some new cultivars.
And maybe get several different types of cultivars.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Well, we are joined by Cindy Haynes and Richard Geron from Iowa State University. I have also received word that Mark Vitosh is here, DNR District Forester. So surprise on that.
Yay.
So any plant-related or tree-related questions you can ask on today's show. It's Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. You can call us at 866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back with your questions right after this.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 8 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for spring pre-registration is April 21st. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Horticulture Day on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jason Burns in for Charity Nebbe. I'm joined by Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes from Iowa State University. And also joining us in our Iowa City studio is Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. I believe we already have a question for a tree-related issue at 866-780-9100. Let's go to Lynn in Des Moines. Lynn, I understand you have a question about a waterway in your backyard and what you should do about trees back there. Welcome to Talk of Iowa.
Well, thank you. My name is Lynn. I live in Johnston, and we have a beautiful little, I call it a creek, that might be a little generous, of stormwater runoff that's managed in our community through our backyard. And there are a lot of trees that are softwoods. And I've noticed that several of them are either cracking or falling, and I want to make sure that we maintain the trees. And I'd love to add some, if there are some good trees that would thrive and contribute well to that area in our little creek bed in our backyard.
So what I would do, Lynn, is I would actually contact whoever that is to see what their goals are. One of the concerns I would have is if there are trees that are weak or have decay in them or starting to break, if that's also an area that in the summertime kids play and run through and people walk along those areas, you'd be concerned about risk trees. So you'd want to communicate with the Johnston folks or whoever's in charge of that area. But there are some species, in some cases, they may not want trees in those areas. It just depends. But if they do, some of the species that could be planted in those areas would be things like swamp white oak, river birch, sycamore. So there are species that are adaptable to those conditions depending on how much space, what the soil conditions and stuff like that are that they could be. But I would work with them directly to look at the health of the existing trees and then see if there's options for more planting.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Lynn. We've got Bob standing by in Iowa City, and Bob has a potato-related question. So, Bob, thanks for calling Talk of Iowa.
Hi there. I had a question. I bought some potatoes, and I've used most of them. It was a 5-pound bag, but I have a few that I haven't gotten around to using, and they have little growths on them, you know, as though they want to be planted to make more potato plants. I was wondering if, should I just cut those off? Are they dangerous? Is there a problem with them? Or
should I throw potatoes away? Well, if you intend to plant those, and if the sprouts are fairly short, let's say maybe an inch, inch and a half, I would just leave them on. If they're like 3 or 4 inches in length, I would snap off the majority of the sprout, leave the base, and go ahead and plant them.
Okay, well, I don't plan on planting them. I just and they're fairly short. They're only about a half inch long or less, quarter inch.
Yeah, and with some of that, you can just cut them off and remove those little pieces. You'll know when you kind of cut inside, because usually when they start to sprout, they start to shrivel a little bit and get a little soft. And usually when they get soft and shrivel too much, then they're not something we usually want to eat.
Okay, they're not getting soft yet. Are they still edible, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yes. Yes, if they're not getting soft and shriveling up, they're still good to eat.
Okay, well, thank you very kindly.
Perfect. Thanks so much for the call. Reminder that we're taking your calls right now at 866-780-9100. But if you're having a hard time getting through the phone lines, you can always email us anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I've got a caller standing by. I don't have a lot of information here, so welcome to Talk of Iowa. Can you tell us your name and what your question is?
This is Jean. I'm from Earlham. I want to know how to trim my blackberry bushes. I've let them go kind of wild, and I can't walk through them, and I don't know which canes are producing. It's the triple crown variety.
Okay. Well, I would go out there because there might be quite a bit of dieback because of our severe winter, and I would prune out the dead wood. The dead wood should be kind of brownish in color. The live wood should be kind of greenish or kind of reddish green in color. So prune out all the dead wood, and then once they're done producing fruit, and they may not produce a whole lot this year, once they're done producing, those canes should be pruned off at the ground. And then the new canes will come up this spring, and they'll bear next year.
Hopefully that answers your question. Thank you very much for your call. We've got an email question coming in from Alex in Cedar Rapids. Alex says, we have a family of deer that are tearing up our yard with their hooves. Anything we can do at this time to repair the damage?
Boy, I'd probably go out with a rake. When the ground is moist, and just kind of rake it and try to kind of break down some of those ridges. They could also possibly power rake the yard, but I think at this point, maybe just a rake.
Just a rake would do it.
The other thing I would consider is maybe how to kind of, you know, keep the deer out of the yard next.
Right.
So, and I'm not sure.
And that's typically fencing.
Yeah, fencing. That's a little bit harder to do. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And they're not doing more damage.
And deer are kind of up there with bunnies in terms of nuisance as well, because they also, in addition to hoof damage, I mean, if you've got anything growing, they might just try to eat that off.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the best way is to just kind of chew them out of the yard.
Think of some fencing options as you're doing some repairs.
Some type of barrier.
Mm-hmm. But in late winter, early spring, when that ground is very moist, it's also very loose, and that's when they cause most of the damage as far as the hoofs. Once we get into spring and summer, it's going to be much firmer, and so they're not really going to cause much damage as far as the hoof prints.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Linda in Iowa City has called in with a question about beetles and blueberry bushes. Linda, thank you so much for calling Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
Thank you. I'm talking about the little ornery Asiatic beetles that at least in my yard, don't really show up until all of a sudden my blueberries are ripe, kind of, you know, kind of mid-June-ish time. And I've heard you talk about there's something that you can apply to the ground because I think they're in a grub form now. And I just wanted to know if I applied that on the ground, is that going to affect my blueberries? Because they're pretty shallow rooted plants too. So just would love to get rid of the beetle somehow.
Well, you may be speaking of the Japanese beetle. They're kind of a metallic green color. They typically start showing up in mid to late June. They're very numerous in July, early August, and then they kind of fade away. They feed on a number of plants. The larval stage is a grub, but even if you destroyed every single grub in your yard, they would still be there in July and August. And that's because they're very capable flyers, and they fly in from adjacent areas, any grassy area, a lawn, a roadside ditch, playground, whatever. So even if you were to treat your lawn, you really have no impact on the population you're going to experience later on in the year. So there's not much you can do in that regard.
Sorry.
Well, that's not the kind of news.
not good news.
I share your pain, Linda. I've got a creek in my backyard, and they seem to come up from there.
So the only thing you could do would be to treat them once they show up, the actual beetles, where you would go down to the garden center, you'd find something labeled for use on blueberries that effectively destroys the Japanese beetle, the actual adult, and you'd use that according to label directions. So that's really the only way of doing it. The other exception would be where you construct this structure around the plant.
Some kind of netting.
And then cover it with netting so they couldn't actually get in. So...
Well, I have 75 plants, so that probably
that's not going to work.
I'm going to do. No. Hey, thank you so much.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Linda. Yeah, I know that battle well.
Yeah.
Sometimes when they show up, it's just piles upon piles of them. So
yes.
They can be
And
can
they're
be a
they're
fight.
Very very good at eating and consuming everything.
And the question will be, this year we had a very difficult winter.
Right.
Does that impact the population this year?
Right.
There's no way to predict, but it might.
It might.
We can hope.
Maybe yes. Maybe she will have more blueberries than beetles this
Perhaps.
Year.
Perhaps. We're crossing our fingers on that one. Becky is calling from Des Moines, a question about a oak tree that just got removed. Becky, thanks for calling Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
Hi. We had a big old oak tree taken out last year in the stump ground down. It had oak wilt. And we're having some landscaping done. We're going to replace that tree with a maple in the same proximity. But in the yard around that, there's just lots of dips and divots and trouble with grass growing. And my question is, do we need to have any concern or plan around those root systems that might be decomposing underneath, having an impact on the lawn and the smoothness of the lawn, as well as that maple being able to get established with its roots?
As far as the lawn... as the roots decay, you may see some areas that kind of settle, or you have to bring in some soil and basically level it off. That may occur. That shouldn't be a major problem, I wouldn't think.
As far as the tree, I would try not to plant right back in the same space. If you have room to move that tree, you know, even if it's 5-8 feet away from where the main trunk was, to try to eliminate the potential of sinking and some of those problems, I would try to do that. I would try to move it just a little bit away so it's easier to dig a hole, and then that way you wouldn't have probably any major. Because the thing is, even on a big oak tree, usually within 5 to 15 feet after the trunk, you'll get down to about roots about an inch in diameter. So in that first 7-8 feet is where there still might be some big roots. So if you get out a little ways, you'll get away from that potential of decay. And in most cases, though, that'll probably improve the rooting environment for a new tree as it spreads out. But I wouldn't try to go right back in the same spot.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Becky. And we've got a couple more email questions coming in, so I want to get to one of those here real quick from Earl. Earl asks, are there any fescues that don't clump or bunch? I planted a tall fescue a couple of years ago, and I don't like their clumping appearance.
Okay. Well, you have two very different types of fescue. You have the tall fescue, which is a clumping type grass. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the fine leaf fescues, which are different in that they have a very narrow leaf blade, and they're best adapted to the shade. So okay. We typically use those in shady areas, and some of these do creep very nicely. So we have creeping red fescue, we have hard fescue, we have chewing fescue. So some of those are actually creeping type.
Okay, very good. Hopefully that helps. EJ is calling from Des Moines, and EJ has a question that is near and dear to my heart because it is about creeping Charlie. So EJ, welcome to Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
Thank you so much for taking my call. Yeah, I have a lot of it, and it won't go away. And it comes back with a vengeance every single year. Somehow my neighbors have been able to stave it off, but I don't want to be a bad neighbor. So we're just trying to get ahead of things.
Mm-hmm.
And try to address it until it becomes too much of an issue. So what would you recommend that we do? It's a very, very heavily shaded area,
mm-hmm. That's
our backyard. So I don't know if that makes much of a difference.
Well, it's very well adapted to the shade. Has it bloomed in past years?
Has it bloomed?
Yes.
As in flowered?
Yes. It has a small little... It flowers in the spring. It has kind of a blue to purple flower.
And strangely, it's quite pretty.
It's
actually kind of pretty.
It's a really pretty flower.
And I would think it would be in bloom maybe in a week or two. If it's been blooming, it's going to be harder to get rid of it.
Hmm.
What I would suggest is applying a herbicide in the fall. Fall applications are better. They're more effective. And you need to apply the herbicide twice, about a month apart. So the first application typically around late September, early October. The second one a month later. And you want to use a product that contains the herbicide triclopyr, which is spelled T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R, triclopyr. And there's a very, very widely sold product from Ortho. Ortho Weed Be Gone, Chickweed, Clover, and Oxalis Killer. Very common in the trade. And so you can buy that and put it on twice in the fall, and you should get very good control. Now, if it has been blooming in the past, you can destroy the existing plants, but undoubtedly next year you'll have some seeds from the plant germinate, and so it may reappear sometime next summer, and you may have to do it again next fall.
Okay, so there's nothing I can do this year? Just kind of let it be?
Well, later on this fall you can, but the spring applications aren't very effective. Now, you could do it this spring, and it may slow it down a little bit, but you're probably not going to get very good control. If you do it in the fall, we get much better control in that. What actually happens is that the herbicide, when you apply it in the fall, it weakens the plant, and then over winter, it dies out. So it's that combination, the herbicide, the cold in winter, and the plant dies out.
And this is a pretty long battle here too, right? So you might have to be in for a couple of seasons.
It may be a couple of years, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, good luck, EJ. Hopefully you can win the fight.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Remember, we're taking your calls at 866-780-9100. Cindy Haynes and Richard Giron from Iowa State University are here, as well as Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester. Another email question here. Nadine says that I tested the soil in my backyard and it came up deficit in nitrogen. Or deficient, rather.
Mm-hmm.
All of the other mineral levels were fairly adequate. This area is supposed to be turf, but it's not doing very well. Is there something that I can apply that would only supply the missing nitrogen? I did the soil test myself because the internet search I did said the University Extension no longer offers this service.
Right.
Is that true?
And we never actually did test for nitrogen because the nitrogen levels tend to vary according to weather conditions, so we actually never did.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure how accurate the test was. Mm-hmm. As far as a lawn, if they have a lawn, I would just use a typical lawn fertilizer, which is largely nitrogen.
Okay.
The second number is typically zero, that's phosphate. And the third number might be single digits, and that's potash.
Okay, very good. So basically just anything you can find off the shelf that's a
lawn fertilizer. Right.
Yeah, yep. Okay. We've got just a minute here before the break, so I'll take another email question. John in Iowa City says, I have a lilac bush that's about 15 feet tall. It has never been pruned. I understand from past shows that the best time to prune the lilac is after it blooms. Two questions. Am I remembering this correctly? And then two, how aggressively can I prune that bush?
Well, I think what I would do would be take out maybe 3, 4, 5 of the largest, biggest stems.
Okay.
Cut those out near the ground, get rid of those. You could do that before blooming or after blooming, but you need to kind of rejuvenate the shrub. And so I would do that this year, next year, and the following year.
Perfect. Okay. Well, a lot of great questions still hanging on the phone lines here, but if you want to get yours in, now is the time, 866-780-9100, or you can email us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It is Horticulture Day. I'm Jason Burns in for Charity Nebbe. We'll be back in just a minute with more of your questions. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Jason Burns in for Charity Nebbe. Cindy Haynes is with me, Richard Geron as well from Iowa State University. Mark Vitosh joins us in our Iowa City studio, DNR District Forester. And we are taking your questions at 866-780-9100. We've got Rolf hanging on the line from Fairfield. Rolf, welcome to Talk of Iowa. I understand you're looking for a specific type of rose. Mm.
Yes, thank you. I was researching roses that were ever-blooming and some shade tolerance, and there's one that was developed right at the Iowa State, I believe, called Country Dancer, which I like. It's very hard to find. Everyone sold out.
Right. That's one of the Griffith Buck roses. Yeah. It is a super nice one, kind of pink, double flower, and it does bloom really well. It actually has done really well at my parents' house in Louisiana as well. It is a harder one to find. You can contact Ryman Gardens. Sometimes they have a plant sale, so you might be able to get it there. Sometimes I see these at kind of local garden centers. I know there's a garden center in Slater that sometimes has the buck roses. I might call your local garden center and see if they can order some of the buck roses, particularly that one called Country Dancer.
There is a company in Oregon, Heirloom Roses.
Okay.
They're basically a catalog or internet
a mail
source.
Order. Mm-hmm.
And they typically have a pretty good selection.
Yeah, I've been in touch with them. Yeah, excuse me.
And did they have it?
Well, now I'm in my car now, so I don't have my notes with me.
Okay.
They may be sold out.
Right. It's a good one to keep searching for and to keep trying to find, and worth the effort. So.
Huh.
Yeah.
So Ryman Gardens or maybe Slater, I'll call some local places. Now, is there another one that would be similar or comparable to that I may be more easily available, like maybe Pink Peace or something?
Right. Griffith Buck had over 80 different cultivars of roses. And so there are a number that were really, really nice. So what I might suggest is actually visiting Ryman Gardens when these roses are in bloom, so that you can compare Country Dancer to Prairie Lass or Hawkeye Bell or some of the other cultivars, so that you can see some of those different potential options. That might be something. Carefree Beauty is the one that's most commonly available. And it's a nice rose, too, in that kind of pink vein as well. So
okay, so you said Prairie Left?
Yeah, there's Prairie Lass, there's Hawkeye Bell. I don't remember. There's so many. And they're all buck roses.
Yeah, I saw a whole list of them.
I had
come up with this one as a top prospect.
Yeah.
All right, and Ryman Gardens, that's in Des Moines?
It's in Ames. It's a gardens affiliated with Iowa State University, so it's right off of University in Avenue in Ames. And they have premier collection of buck roses.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you taking my call.
You bet.
Give me the answer.
Good luck in your search, Rolf. We have a question, well, more of a comment from Elaine, and I wanted to bring Elaine into the conversation because Elaine has something to say about Creeping Charlie that you may not hear so much. So, Elaine, welcome to Talk of Iowa.
Thank you.
So you're kind of defending Creeping Charlie.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're kind of defending Creeping Charlie a little bit.
Yes, I am. I think it's a beautiful plant. I'm concerned about the constant uses of herbicide in our environments anymore. It's a great ground cover in the shade. It's gorgeous. It brings the bees in. It brings all kinds of insects in. And I got to say, in my own yard, I don't have it because my husband and I fight about it all the time. but I also think dandelions are gorgeous. And I just wish people would start to think about the impact of using all these herbicides. I've seen in my yard a decrease in insect activity in the last several years. I hardly ever see butterflies anymore. And to me, it's really concerning. So I just wish people would think about that a little more, bringing in native species and be a messy gardener. Don't worry about everything looking perfectly manicured.
You're describing my lawn, Elaine.
Yes, and it's gorgeous. And I was wondering maybe if you guys could suggest somewhere where people can go and see where it's been intentionally recultivated to look more like the natural landscape. I'm sure there are places like prairie lands and stuff where they're trying to bring it back, and just those places for people to go see to see what it could really look like in real life.
I feel like that's maybe a slightly different question, because if you're talking about like natural Iowa prairie grassland.
Yeah, that's very different than a typical home lawn that has maybe some of these other weeds that are kind of invading.
I don't know if Creeping Charlie is native?
No, it's not.
No,
it's invasive.
It was brought in as a ground cover, and it's very effective.
And it's gone rogue. It's gone rogue.
Yeah, and it's definitely gone rogue. So gotcha. It does have a pretty flower, and does help out the bees. And I don't think we'll ever totally get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So it will always be there.
My other app is planting things that are native. You know, trying to, because there's a lot of beautiful native flowers that you can put in your garden, and they're not as bothered by, you know, if you cultivate those, you know, it just helps our environment more and cut down on the herbicides and stuff. I guess that's one of my big concerns. And bring the insects back.
Yep. Well, thank you, Elaine. Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day today. We're taking calls at 866-780-9100. Lots of folks on the line standing by. We've got Dave in Cedar Rapids, who's talking about fertilizer for blueberries. So, Dave, what's your question?
Yeah, I live in Cedar Rapids, but I have a cabin up in Waukon, and I've been trying to grow blueberries up there. And I understand the soil needs to be quite acidic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also have two dogs here at home, and needless to say, I have a lot of dog waste. Now, people have told me that the dog waste is acidic, and I'm wondering if I dry that waste, if I could use it as a fertilizer for the blueberries.
No, I would not do so. Basically, I would apply sulfur around the plant. Sulfur is a material that will lower the pH gradually, slowly, but I would do that instead. And I would do that once, maybe twice a year, once in the spring possibly and once in the fall.
And I can get the sulfur at a nursery of some sort?
At a garden center, yes. Mm-hmm. Well,
thank you for your help.
Its purpose is to lower the pH. That's its purpose.
Right.
Dave, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you very much.
Yep, you bet. Thanks for calling Talk of Iowa. And I will say, we've gotten questions like that before. That seems to be kind of a pretty pervasive thought. But, I mean, in no, pretty much like cat waste, dog waste, any kind of pet waste, you should really shy away from, right?
You don't put it in the compost pile. You just get rid of it.
Yeah, it becomes a food safety issue at some point. So, yeah.
There's a lot of bacteria and things that you just can't control in that situation.
Right.
So just better to steer clear.
Absolutely.
So Ken in Moline, Illinois, is on the line with a question about hedges. Ken, welcome to Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
I have hedges along both sides of my backyard. And a couple years back, the snow was a foot deep on the ground all winter, and as a result, the rabbits ate all the bark off of the hedges from 1 foot up, you know, as high as they could reach. So I thought they were done, and I cut them all off about 2 feet high, and I was going to pluck them out of the ground. Well, I didn't get to it. And then they took off, and they grow like weeds. I trim them 3 or 4 times in the summertime, but I've got a few bare spots, and what I'm wondering is if I could start a new plant from one of the shoots off of the existing plants.
With many shrubs, you can root cuttings. things like lilacs and privets and things like that, you would basically go out and you would collect tissue from new growth towards maybe the end of June or so. That new growth by then is partially hardened. It's still pretty soft, but it's partially hardened. And you would cut sections off, basically shoot tips, maybe 6 inches in length. You would pinch off the lower leaves on the cutting. You would dip the cut end in a rooting hormone, which encourages rooting. And then you would try to root those in either coarse sand or perlite. So you could use a flat or a big pot, and you would put them in there. And then you would water the medium, keep it nice and moist. And then once you've done that, what you need to do is maybe put in some stakes or sticks around the container, and then put a clear plastic bag over everything to keep in the moisture. Because you have these cuttings, they don't have any root system, they're going to lose moisture, and they're likely to wilt and die before they root. But if you have this closed environment, then they typically do well. You can also buy these plastic domes that go over flats that work well too, but you need to keep the moisture in, so either a plastic dome or a plastic bag. And then they should root, hopefully, in 6 to 8 weeks. When they've rooted, you can pot them up in potting soil.
Great, great. Now, I try to just go to my home center, my garden supply, and look and couldn't find anything like the ones I've got, and they were finally identified as privet hedge.
Yeah.
Privet. So I started to investigate that, and there's probably 500 different kinds of privet hedge, which I didn't realize. So I just wanted to start some new ones to replace the ones that I've lost over the years. So that's great information. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Ken, and best of luck to you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Let's go to Teddy in Des Moines. I believe Teddy has a question about arborvitae. Teddy, welcome to Talk of Iowa.
Did my 2 or 3 year old arborvitae they planted 2 or 3 years ago in a row. One of them is losing a lot of needles from the ground up.
And when did that occur? Over winter, or was it occurring last summer?
It looked like it started at the beginning of the fall last year, but now it's pretty bad. It's, you know, a foot and a half up on a 5 foot tree.
Well, arborvitae have very few insect and disease problems, so I think it's more environmental. I'm not sure exactly what the problem is. Maybe the plant is in fairly poor health. It's dropping some foliage. The winter may have contributed to that because we had a very harsh winter, and a tree under stress can't handle the winter nearly as well. So I think it's more environmental, not a pest problem. So I think you probably can't do much at this point. You could lightly fertilize it. That would be fine. If we have a dry spring and summer, you can water it periodically. Basically, probably trying to provide the best growing conditions you can for the plant and see if it recovers.
You may want to check that particular site of that one tree, too, to see if the soil drainage is maybe either a little lighter or a little more clay, because you could be having specific drainage issues. So even if that tree fades and there's something wrong with, even in a backyard, every 5 feet, that soil can change and vary. So you might have a little pocket of something that maybe is also causing a problem.
It's right in the middle of a row of 6 trees.
But even if they're a couple feet apart, there could be something in that little pocket that you just may want to stick a shovel in just to see if there's a little more clay or if the soil's a little different to see if there's some variation also.
And then what do I do if there's a variation?
That's the question.
That's the challenge.
Well, then you might have to water it periodically when it's dry. The other ones may not have to be watered. You may have to get a little bit of fertilizer where the other ones don't. So maybe some extra care.
There you go.
Thank you for your help. Thanks.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Teddy. Appreciate it. Let's go to Sue in Des Moines. Sue is asking a question about ground cover. Sue, welcome to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa.
Hi, Okay, thanks. I have a comment about it. Sounded like some antique rose discussion. Mm-hmm. And Kathy up at Miss Effie's Gardens, she recommended to me to look at the Antique Rose Emporium. Mm-hmm. They're in Texas. And I found the Seven Sisters Rose that I have been looking and looking for, as well as what certainly appears to be an Iowa Wild Rose. The prices are good. They have a great reputation. And I didn't know if they'd been mentioned or not.
No, they haven't.
But they also have Buck's Roses, quite a selection of Buck Roses.
Right. Awesome.
So I thought that interesting. Yeah. But I'm having construction done, and my topography was strange to start with, and now I will have some slopes that will be feathered out from the wall of the new construction out into the yard, and I'd like some kind of ground cover that I don't have to mow. I've looked at clover and blooming time, and everybody thumbs their nose up at me. Is there a recommendation?
Sun or shade?
Full sun.
Okay. You might consider possibly daylilies, especially the repeat blooming cultivars like Stella de Ora. Very nice, okay. Low maintenance. The clump gets bigger over time. You can divide them in a few years and spread them out. So that would be a possibility.
You can also think of some of the ground cover sedums as well. They spread. They're much lower growing, but they spread and spread fairly quickly, which are kind of cool.
Well, and this, and I don't remember, does the sedum have roots or is it just strictly full? Because I'm going to have something with roots to hold the soil
yes.
in place.
Yes, and it will. Okay. It will. Okay. They don't have as deep roots as maybe those prairie plants like, or something larger like the daylily. So,
you know, I could probably put a wildflower mix in there
that
too,
Little blue stem would be another if you want to get some native Side Oats Grandma. Some of those are smaller. They'll be smaller than your Indian grass and switchgrass and big blue stem. So there are some shorter grasses that would work in that situation.
And then you can mix in some of the prairie flowers too.
And if it's not too big an area, I might go with a plant. Hello?
Go ahead.
If it's not too big an area, you might want to purchase plants if it's not a big area because they're much easier to establish, and you can buy plants from a number of companies where you can buy specific plants and know exactly what you're getting.
There we go.
Yes.
Well, hopefully that gives you a bunch of good options.
It's a very large area.
Okay.
So,
well, good luck, Sue. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you so much. All right.
Bye-bye. We're running short on time here, so I think that's probably going to have to do it here for Talk of Iowa. I want to thank Mark Vichosh for joining us in the Iowa City studio. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks to Cindy Haynes and Richard Geron from Iowa State University right here with me in Ames. Thank you.
Thank
You're welcome.
You.
And Talk of Iowa is produced by Emily Woodbury, Caitlin Harrop, and Dennis Reese with production assistance from Lulu Dewey. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. We also had assistance today from Nick Brinks. I'm Jason Burns. I'm in for Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thanks for joining us.